Welcome to another edition of Veterans News. Today we're speaking with Don Overton, the Executive Director of Veterans of Modern Warfare. Don, welcome back to Veterans News.
Thank you so much, Eric. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
We wanted to talk a little bit about the new 21st century GI Bill. Could you give us a kind of a brief overview of what that bill is and who it applies to?
Yeah, and I think we should begin with just a brief disclaimer to your listening audience to first and foremost let all the veterans and military out there first and foremost make sure that they are extremely educated consumers in this new benefit package. It's a very complex, multi-tiered package, and we want to ensure that it's applicable to maximize the benefits for the veterans. Veterans are going to do better under the old Montgomery GI Bill than under the Chapter 33 post 9/11 GI Bill. So
I see.
Really encourage them to become educated, speak with the counselors on their college campuses. And
okay.
Because one of the aspects about this new program is once you elect it, you can never go back. So
once you enter into Chapter 33, it's a reversible decision.
Uh-huh,
I see. And are the counselors, the college counselors, well-informed of those the options before the students?
I wish I could say that they were at this time.
Uh-huh.
The bill was signed into law back in July of 2008, and
okay.
The Department of Veterans Affairs had a year to prepare for this. I don't think they did a very good job of the outreach with the college campus program administrator. So I would encourage individuals to look at va.gov at the GI Bill or speak with an accredited veteran service organization just to make sure that they're entering into the right program.
Yes, we have two colleges here, one in Moscow and then one 7 miles across the border in Pullman, both land-grant universities, and I'm sure we have a lot of veterans attending those. And so I will personally contact the counselors in both of those universities and make sure they're well-informed. And can you provide me with a source of information that counselors might be able to access and use in order to advise veterans?
The best resource, I believe, still out there is going to be the va.gov website, and
okay.
You can link right to the benefits section from there on the GI Bill.
All right.
And for those on the campuses, of course, they'll have direct contact information with the counselors of the program if there's additional information and resources that they require.
Mm-hmm. So in answer to the second part of my question, who does it apply to? It largely depends on the veteran as to what they want to sign up for. Is that correct?
It does, and that's one of the aspects, is the fact that it's a multi-tiered program, and so
mm-hmm.
Eligibility is basically consists of those individuals that have had active military service beginning on or after September 10th of 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the nice features of the new GI Bill is the fact that it also applies to National Guard and Reservists, who we know are playing such a pivotal role in Operations Iraqi and Enduring Freedom.
That's right. That's a role that they haven't played heretofore.
Exactly, and so making sure that they have it. So basically the way it works is, you know, eligibility is for those that have served a minimum of 90 days on active duty
mm-hmm.
after September 10th of 2001,
mm-hmm.
and as we stated, you know, that can be for the Guard and Reservists as well. So that's the basic eligibility criterion, is the 90 days of consecutive service after that date.
Excellent. Okay, and what kind of benefits are in the 21st century new GI Bill? What does it cover?
The nice thing about this is it really brought this benefit package up to speed with the current state of affairs with economic factors today. So basically what the individuals will receive under Chapter 33 is they'll receive up to 100% of their tuition and fees covered,
mm-hmm.
And that'll be for the highest in-state tuition for a public college or university. Those are paid directly to the school, so the students have no interaction with that once they submit their paperwork for VA for processing, and VA communicates directly with the school.
I
so
see.
100% of tuition and fees, which is very nice.
That's really nice, because if there's a hang-up, then it's the registrar's problem, not the student's problem.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so hopefully, and that's what we're seeing right now. I'm sure we'll get into that after we go over
right.
the program.
Yeah, we're
but,
heading there.
Some of the issues with getting these checks rolling right now. So. But the other nice thing is it also allows for a monthly living or a housing stipend, which has never been afforded under the previous programs. And that's based on the basic allowance for housing at an E5 with dependent rate based mm-hmm. on the area that you're attending school in, not necessarily your home of origin. But
various costs of living for different areas.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that can range anywhere from $1,200 a month all the way up to, I believe it caps at about $2,700 a month, depending on where you are.
So quite a range there.
There's also $1,000 a year books and supply stipend that's available, and that's usually paid in $500 per semester.
Mm-hmm.
Based on that, there's also, which is a neat feature in this benefit, is that there's a one-time relocation allowance, and that's a $500 allowance for individuals that are living in rural areas that need to relocate.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to take advantage of that. And one of the other big features on this, and one of the areas that's still being worked out through Department of Defense regulations, is transferability of benefits. And in other words, an individual
to
on
dependents.
Active duty, and it's it applies to active duty at this time, can transfer their education benefits initially to their spouse, and then after a set period of time, I believe it's 10 years of service, then the transferability of those benefits can also go to children as well.
All right. Uh-huh. That's very nice. Well, now I've got your after-action report here, and you've been following the performance of the Veterans Administration in carrying out some of these new responsibilities. Would you tell us what you've been seeing and what you've been reporting to Veterans of Modern Warfare general constituency?
Yeah, one of our big concerns, and we just got the most recent report, which is a conference call that we do with the Department of Veterans Affairs on a monthly basis. We've been working with them for the past year through these conference calls, trying to alert them of some of the issues to prepare for, and some of the frustration that we're feeling right now is that we just don't believe that they put all the pieces in place mm-hmm. to get this out, although they continuously reassured us throughout the past year that they would be ready to roll. And so, you know, we got a lot of numbers last week, and what we were looking at was, for the biggest part, that there were over 236,000 claims received by VA.
These were new claims,
education
huh?
benefits.
And these are for student benefits?
These are for student benefits.
Uh-huh. Wow.
According to the Department of Veterans Affairs, action was completed on 169,000 of those claims, leaving at a minimum 67,000 still waiting for adjudication.
Wow.
And
is the adjudication process kind of drawn out?
Yes, and you know, keep in mind these are individuals that are depending on these monies to cover their cost of living.
Right. They're trying to get into the college of their choice, and
we've got individuals now that we're beginning to retrieve that we're fielding calls for that are in school, worried about whether or not they're going to be able to remain in school because the schools have not received payments yet. Our understanding is that they will, and that the schools are going to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to keep that in place.
There's a lot of concern
over, you know, how long it's going to take them to get caught up. The current average, I believe, is that there's approximately 23,000 claims still coming in weekly
on the
benefits. And one of the biggest things that VA states as being one of the hang-ups is putting it back on the veteran, stating that the veteran didn't fill out the forms properly and things along those lines.
Not very helpful.
Not very helpful at all, not the type of answers that we wanted to hear at this point in the rollout. And also finding out the small numbers, there's over 6,800 schools involved and 14,000 tuition and fee payments have been made to date. So that's a very small number when you look at a 250,000 plus applicants and there's only 14,000 checks that have gone out thus far. And 17,300 for requests for transferability already for dependents and spouses in the program. So
the VA is pretty much scrambling. They're not only seeing an increased caseload, but they're probably also doing some significant restructuring within the VA. Is that not so?
They are, and you know, we received. Their time frame, which they believe that they're going to move to a fully automated system by 2010, you know, and that's what VA Central Office is putting out. Unfortunately, the Subcommittee on Economic Opportunities just held a hearing about a week ago, and looking into the automation and the system, and what happened is VA entered into a contractual, or what's referred to as an interagency agreement with the Navy Space Warfare Systems Command, which is the acronym is SPAWAR, which SPAWAR was to provide the information technology services to implement the post-9/11 GI Bill. And VA Inspector General's report that was just released showed that the interagency agreement was not done in a professional manner. The report ended up concluding that the VA entered into this agreement without conducting analyses that are required by federal acquisition regulations, and that both VA and SPAWAR failed to comply with the terms and conditions of the agreement. So right now, you know,
so they have no automated system coming online.
Yeah, and there's still so much going on, and the contracts are flawed from the beginning, and so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if VA had a full year to prepare for what all the veteran service organizations told them was going to be a run on these benefits, and they're scrambling to play catch-up now last minute and get the checks out. Well, you know, they're under a year now to get this contract and to get this IT in place, and there's already issues around the contract and how the contract has been implemented. So we have a lot of concern over how they're going to get this accomplished.
What's the prognosis on this bind?
For us, we don't know. We believe that there should have been an open bidding for the contracts rather than this interagency agreement, allowing various IT corporations to come in and bid on this contract and possibly bring outside sources into VA to help accommodate this new program. But we don't know at this time. Of course, we'll have to continue with the congressional oversight hearings, looking at this and monitoring it, and try to get all of the regulations implemented accordingly.
And not having that automated system is part of the problem of not being able to process all of these new claims as rapidly as they need to. Is that not so?
And that's correct. You know, I believe, and I could be off on the number, but there were only a few hundred additional temporary case managers for the education benefits programs that were brought online with minimal training to try to get this all accomplished, not to mention, you know, the ongoing additional education programs that VA is responsible for overseeing.
Right. Wow. Well, the VA seems to be in pretty much of a bind. I hope that the institutions that are the students are attending, the student vets are attending, cut them a little slack on these programs with the expectation that funding will eventually come through, although it may be hung up for a while. I don't know. That's probably up to the individual institution as far as what kind of policy they have for, you know, payment due.
It is. One of the other features that we didn't mention, and we encourage other institutions to look at this, is the yellow ribbon component to the program, which allows individuals to attend some of the higher cost private schools as well. If the colleges enter into the yellow ribbon program, then those colleges and universities will offset the cost of the tuition at the maximum, you know, VA allowable rate, and then the colleges and universities will absorb the remainder, giving individuals more flexibility to attend schools of their choice. So that's another nice component. And one piece that I'd like to touch on that we didn't catch in the original regulation aspect of this when we analyzed it was, and we'll be trying to get this corrected as soon as possible, is there was no transferability of these benefits to the survivors of our fallen in the combat theater, and we're gravely concerned about that. We look at this, of course, as it's a benefit that these individuals have earned and certainly should have transferability to their surviving spouses and dependents of the fallen.
That's right. So, yeah, especially the dependents, the people who are trying to keep that family going.
Correct.
Yeah, it's a very important point. Well, Don, you mentioned that you're going to be camped out in Washington for the next week or so, watching the congressional committees in progress there. What are you going to keep an eye on?
Well, actually, I've got some preliminary travel. I'm going to be meeting with the National Association of State Directors of Veterans Affairs here next week initially, which will give us an opportunity to address the 50 state directors across the country, which is the state level of veterans advocacy. Mm-hmm. They provide a lot of claims assistance and different types of services. We'll be in D.C. the week after that and pretty much up on Capitol Hill full-time from that point forward. We have several components that we'll be looking at. We've got some oversight into Gulf War veterans and Gulf War veterans' health that we could possibly be testifying before the oversight committee at the beginning of October, right. And we'll be working on some of the survivor components.
I know that you've requested toxicity studies and longitudinal studies on these veterans. Is there any movement on that front?
Well, we're hoping after this will be the third in a three-part series of the oversight hearings, so mm-hmm. we're hoping that we'll have some recommendations handed down to Secretary Shinseki and the Department of Veterans Affairs from the oversight and investigations hearings. It looks like we're going to have good funding into the CDMRP, which is the Congressional Directed Medical Research Programs, into Gulf War studies. So we're looking at possibly some good research coming online to help continue to drive the treatment aspect and treatment
Excellent.
Component of this
Excellent.
Is what we're looking for now. So.
Right, right. And anything else that you're going to be tracking on Capitol Hill when you get there?
The biggest thing I think we're in right now is we're involved in a collaborative national effort right now pertaining to the veterans courts. We're trying to get some hearings underway now to look at the justice involved aspect of the veterans.
The veterans civil liberties clause in your white paper.
Yes.
And are those courts going to be considering restorative justice? Yeah. The term is restorative justice as opposed to punitive justice. Restorative justice looks at the grievance against the person who is aggrieved and has the transgressor deal with that as opposed to being incarcerated. Anyway, it's predicated actually on the idea that the transgressor is and will continue to be a part of the community, and rather than isolating them from the community, trying to ameliorate the behavior and right the wrongs. Anyway, that's what restorative justice is, and it's been used in a number of local courts and tribal courts. I think that would be an interesting approach to do with veterans, because I can see where a person under a great deal of stress and trying to get their feet under them and being confused and possibly self-medicating could run afoul of the law. And they're not a bad person. They've just made some bad choices, but it could start a downward spiral. And it'd be nice to have a restorative type of solution to that.
And you're spot on your analysis of the entire situation. That's exactly what we're looking at and how we'd like to approach the entire process. There's such a myriad of conditions that individuals experience as they try to reintegrate into society. And, you know, coming out of these current conflicts, we see the high prevalence of post-traumatic stress disorder coupled with traumatic brain injuries from the IED blast, which so many are experiencing and such. So, you know, it's a very, very difficult for the warriors to ask for help. We're starting to see a shift in that and more services becoming available and more individuals, you know, ending the stigma of asking for help. And we would like to continue to see that positive trend. But part of that, of course, is going to be the restorative component of it. And that's what we hope to be able to intervene on and go back and address some of the situations of those that are already in the judicial system, those that are already in penal institutions. And so however we can, you know, help advocate on their behalf, that's going to be a major national initiative. There's a lot of momentum, and it is a national campaign right now. There are groups that are coming together to form collaboratives so that we can really address this from all sides. So we have judges involved with this initiative. We have individuals in law enforcement. So pretty much across the board, as well as mental health professionals and veteran service organizations, of course, looking at this issue and beginning to analyze and assess it and how best to direct resources towards this problem. So
excellent. That's an excellent approach. I hope you make great headway in that area. On our end, we're trying to form a veterans discussion group here with the community and student veterans at the University of Idaho who may be out of their home communities and away from their families. And we have a military mom, Susan Gallimore, who's also an author. Her son is an Army Ranger. And she's coming on October 8th and 9th. And she does quite a bit of group discussion work. And she's worked with military families and also with Israeli and Palestinian combatants. She's originally South African, has lived in Israel, and is now an American citizen. So we're hoping to get together a group and that she can be a kind of a catalytic agent to getting the discussion going and getting people opening up and talking about their concerns. So that's what we're trying to do on our end, and we certainly will talk to the administrators in the two universities here and make sure that they're appraised of the difficulties that the Veterans Administration is having keeping up with the funding demands. Well, Donald, are there any thoughts that you'd like to leave us with before we close this out?
Really, just once again, just to encourage individuals to be an educated consumer, and not just the educational component, but all of their benefits, and to really encourage the listeners to get involved with the Veterans Service Organization. Of course, you know, I recommend Veterans of Modern Warfare, but I hold a lifetime membership in the Disabled American Veterans, American Legion, Veterans of Foreign War, and really, you know, what it's about is making sure that you are prepared to help those that are going to come behind you. You know, the benefits that we're fighting for today and winning things like this new GI Bill were not easy accomplishments. And, you know, there's those that are going to serve behind us, and we have to make sure that the benefits are in place for them and that we're prepared to meet their needs as that next generation of veterans comes on board. So just really encourage the individuals to get actively involved. You know, there's college campus groups as well as the you know, traditional veteran service organizations. So just seek out those groups in your area, find one that you have a goodness of fit with, and get connected.
And go to the VMWUSA.org website and see what the VMW is doing for you and what policies they're promoting in Congress. Donald Overton, Executive Director of Veterans of Modern Warfare. Thanks again for this update, and we hope to talk to you soon about news of the veterans' benefits and what progress you're making in Congress.
Thank you so much.